Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. He's here at this time every week. Hi there, Bill.
Hi, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, it's an important thing. We have to talk about it. People don't like to talk about it very much, perhaps, but planning to make things easier for your family and heirs, they don't like discussing it. It's, you know, death and all the rest of it. But planning ahead could make a very big difference for what you leave behind, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's understandable. None of us want to face up to the fact that, you know, we are going to die one day. None of us know when that day will be. Hopefully everyone, you know, listening to this will live a very long and healthy life. But life isn't quite like that, I'm afraid. You know, the practical implications of life are that you are likely to face up to difficulties later in life, which you have to confront. Now, you know, many people that we meet in business at Blevins Franks, they have, generally speaking, avoided discussing the practical implications of their death. But, you know, if I had my way, I would expose everybody who hasn't made a proper estate planning operation. I would let everybody have a look at some of the dreadful circumstances that have confronted a large number of people that I've met over the last 40 years where they haven't had a plan in place. And they have lost fortunes to tax and also spent years trying to unravel the circumstances which they are then enmeshed in simply because a plan wasn't put in place at the appropriate time to deal with those issues that arise only when you have decided to pop your clogs.
So let's start with a power of attorney. Do you think it's a good idea to set one up, or could it be risky perhaps?
I don't think the risks are worthy of too much consideration. I mean, obviously, they need to be carefully drafted because although, you know, death and the planning for it is a sensitive subject, and indeed the issue of failing health through, you know, dementia or Alzheimer's, which can affect all of us, I mean, you need to get some advice on what is known as a power of attorney, an enduring power of attorney perhaps, or a lasting power of attorney. You need to get on to that before you need it, because you need to be of a sound mind to deal with it. Granting a lasting power of attorney legally enables someone whom you trust to make decisions about your property, your finances, and perhaps more importantly, your lifetime welfare, if you're unable to make those decisions for yourself, perhaps through illness, but you might if you had a dreadful accident. And of course, you know, as we get older, the risk of a deteriorating mental condition is apparent. Now, the people that you appoint under a lasting power of attorney, they can manage your bank account on your behalf within the terms of the attorney, of course. They have to manage it within the constraints that the power of attorney gives them. They can manage your property, your investments, your pensions. and, as I say, importantly, about your health, whether you have home-based healthcare or whether you go into a place where you perhaps more intensive care. They can talk about changing your doctor. And it might be that they can deal with temporary situations when you're unwell and you may need hospitalisation. On the other hand, if you are diagnosed with a condition of dementia or something similar to it, they can take responsibility for the long-term welfare that you will benefit from, because they are empowered to make judgments on your behalf. Now, it's obviously a very good idea to discuss exactly what it is you would wish for with the person that you're going to appoint as your attorney. And usually it is a family member or a trusted friend, so they should be aware of what you're looking to do. And you need to make them aware of your personal wishes. Now, once you've registered a lasting power of attorney, it actually only becomes effective if you lose your mental capacity or you no longer want to make decisions for yourself. If you become mentally incapacitated without a lasting power of attorney being in force, unfortunately, in the UK in particular, a body known as the Court of Protection normally takes control of your assets. And the problem with that is that every time you need to do something for the individual who is not capable of making their own judgment, an application to the court has to be made. It's not only costly and time consuming, they frequently refuse to allow payment simply because they can.
Wow. Well, Bill, we often talk about deciding what is the best option for your pension funds, but what about inheritance process for pensions? What do we need to be aware of here?
Well, I mean, if you're dealing with the planning now to make life easier for your family, then you need to make sure all the relevant paperwork that may be required, especially, as you say, for your pensions, because that's often going to leave a fairly substantial pot of money. When you first set up a pension, you generally speaking specify who's going to inherit your benefit of the pension fund through what's known as an expression of wish or a nominated beneficiary form. But many people forget to update these if their family situation changes. We come across that frequently, where the client is surprised to find who the beneficiaries are in relation to the pension fund, because the expression of wishes or the nominated beneficiary form hasn't been changed for 25 years. Now, if your documentation is up to date and there is confusion or a dispute over who's going to receive your benefit, then usually the decisions fall to the trustees of your pension, and they frankly very often don't have a clue about what your best interests are. They do have to consider your best interests, but they are remote from you, if you see what I mean. So you need to make sure you're in the holistic way that we tend to apply financial planning. We try to ensure that both your pensions paperwork and your will are current, and that they are actually in line with each other. One doesn't contradict the other, as it were.
Well, for our listeners in Spain, Bill, wills, of course, are a big part of estate planning. But do British expatriates in Spain need to be particularly careful with their wills and making sure they're suitable for their current situation and wishes?
I think they do need to be specifically careful because, as we've discussed many times in the past, individuals who expatriate out of the United Kingdom and choose to live in Spain often have assets in the UK, and they obviously have assets in Spain as well. And the laws on succession and inheritance are different in both places. And to avoid time-consuming delays and costs, and to reduce the level of financial grief that can often apply in these circumstances, it's better to divide up your assets as to their location and apply them to a will or testament in accordance with what you want to happen with those assets wherever they happen to be based. So it's a good idea to outline how your estate should be passed on and make sure it's up to date regularly. And as I've said, for expatriates and British expatriates with overseas property in particular, it can be very beneficial to have two wills, one for the assets you've got in your adopted country, Spain, and a UK-based will for British-based assets. Now, you have to be careful how you establish those wills. You can't do a will in Spain and then go to the UK lawyer and he writes this your last will and testament. Otherwise, he's contradicted the earlier one. You have to have the will specifically written for the assets in each location. So the wills can have to be aligned. And in a sense, you've got to cross-reference one to the other to avoid a conflict, so that you might say, in the UK, this will is drafted in consideration of the assets which are based in the United Kingdom, for example. And a UK will However, even if you don't have a Spanish rule, a UK rule can be effective and is effective in Spain, but you've got to go through the UK probate process, and then it's got to be translated from the English into Spanish. Then you've got to get it notarized before going through probate in Spain as well. So separate wills is an important consideration and can often save massive delays and expense for the people who are going to be your beneficiaries. So as I say, make sure when you're setting up a UK will, it's a standard provision that the drafting of the will automatically revokes all earlier versions. And if you make a Spanish will and then change your UK one, ensure that your lawyer knows about both, so that there, it isn't unintentionally invalidating your Spanish will, if you see what I mean.
I do, exactly. So what about inheritance tax planning, Bill? I presume planning ahead could make a big difference here.
Yeah, I you know, without wishing to repeat myself time and time again, the circumstances of succession tax in Spain and inheritance tax in the UK is inordinately complex, because both of those aspects of taxation are separate. They aren't covered under the double tax treaty, and you can end up at your passing leaving an estate which is subject to tax on the same assets in both jurisdictions, subject to then negotiating what's known as unilateral relief. So in the circumstances, you know, whilst succession and inheritance tax are readily capable of fairly sophisticated tax planning that can reduce the liabilities down to a low level, you really do have to pay attention as early as possible, because the sooner you make the planning, the more certain the outcome will be. For example, if you make gifts under UK inheritance tax rules and you survive for 7 years, those gifts fall out of the reckoning completely. And there are ways in which you can use these allowances in the UK to mitigate your taxation legally. And so the earlier you put the plan in place, the more significant the savings will be.
Mm, interesting. Do you have any other advice for listeners on how they can plan ahead in this way to make life easier for their family and heirs?
It isn't an easy subject to confront clients with. When we meet with clients, it's usually about their investments and tax planning. And frankly, the last thing you want to do is to disenfranchise yourself from the client by starting to talk about death at your first meeting. But, you know, there is always the implication that we are looking to prepare the client's total financial circumstances for his or her benefit and for the benefit of their successors or their beneficiaries. And within Blevins Franks, we have devised a very important document. It's called My Legacy. It is a document which you can ask any one of our partners or senior partners for. It allows you to record what you own, where it is kept, and what your wishes are, and who to contact in the event of a number of different circumstances. Now, it covers a raft of information, your personal details, who to contact, your personal funeral wishes, where your documents are stored. Because generally speaking, at the passing of somebody, unless they've been properly organized sometime in advance, one of the greatest problems is actually finding everything. Finding everything, where is it? Who should I tell about this? Who is going to be the beneficiary? You need to sit down and get all that mapped out in the first place. As I say, if you contact the offices of Blevins Franks, this document, My Legacy, is worth considering. You know, they would be very happy, I'm sure, to give you a copy of it. And then you can consider whether or not you feel it's of benefit to you in completing it.
It sounds very interesting, Bill. Contact, I suppose, is at the website.
Yeah, if you go to the website www.blevinsfranks.com and you contact the office closest to where you live and talk about this radio interview this morning, and you mentioned that in terms of making things easier for your family and your beneficiaries, could you have a copy of the document known as My Legacy, so that you can start to look at what you might need to do to meet that objective of making life easier for your dependents once you have passed on. And I'm sure that they'll send you a copy straight away.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll talk at the same time next week.
It's a pleasure, Howard. Take care.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.